Lord has given me a gift. Only one. I am the most complete fighter in the world.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Adkins Undisputed, the most complete Scott Adkins podcast in the world. I'm your host, Mike Scott, coming at you with a review of Scott's new 2021 film, Castle Falls, directed by and co-starring the almighty Dolph Lundgren, as well as Jim Chandler, Dave Halls, Kim DeLonghi, and a slew of sort of indie stunt people that you might have recognized once or twice in movies before. But we'll get into that. As always, this review will stay spoiler free for about the first 15-20 minutes, and then I'll give you all ample notice so that you can shut it off and watch the movie and then come back and listen to us finish up. And as always, I do not do this by myself. I am joined this time by a returning guest. He was one of the first guests on this show way early in the day. Did the 1-2 punch with me of Pit Fighter and Unleashed. He writes for Video Culture. He writes for Patron Saint website of this podcast, Film Combat Syndicate. He's also one of my very good friends, Matthew Essery. Matt, how are you today, man?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for asking, and thanks for having me back for a third time. I feel very special. That's rarefied air, you know.
Yeah, man, happy to do it. There's actually, that's one of the problems I have is there's people I want on the show that I just don't have the opportunity to get back on. So when this opportunity presented itself, you know, we were chatting about Castle Falls and I was like, yeah, like just let's just, we were already basically chatting over Twitter what this would have been. So I'm like, well, let me just hit record on it and we'll do it. So
yeah, there's no point in wasting the content, right?
Right, exactly. The amount of good content I waste just throwing it out on Twitter for free.
That's one of my biggest problems, man. Just giving it all away for free. Yeah.
All right. So let's kind of just start with some of our initial thoughts. You know, this is coming out early. We were lucky enough to get screeners on this, which I will admit is never the ideal way to watch a movie typically. But Matt, what were your initial thoughts on Castle Falls?
Well, it's like so many things, it's complicated. Because, you know, you have to kind of look at it as like an action film diehard, and somebody's a huge fan of both Dolph Lundgren and Scott Adkins. But you also try to look at, I always try to look at it outside of myself as someone, if I was just coming to this movie cold, not knowing who these guys were, not knowing the situation, what would I think of it? And I liked it, but with a lot of caveats. It's definitely a flawed film, and I don't think the flaws are necessarily Scott or Dolph's fault per se. But it's let's see. The best I can think to say it is it's got some solid acting from both of them in it. It's got some solid action in it, but it never really gets to what I would call great. It hovers around pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty much going to be on the same page here. I do realize I need to give some, before I get into my initial thoughts, I should give some background here on this. First of all, the plot involves, without getting into too many spoilers, the plot involves a down on his luck MMA fighter named Mike Wade, played by Scott, who I will say I did appreciate. He is, they let him use his actual accent. He's not even affecting a different British accent. That's his accent. That's the guy that I talked to on the phone. And I loved, there is one line, and I am going to spoil this really quickly. Somebody asks him where he's from and he says Birmingham, you know, the real one, because this is filmed and takes place in Birmingham, Alabama. Mike gets a job on a demolition crew that's demolishing a hospital, and through various circumstances finds out that there is $3 million stashed in the building. Dolph is a prison guard whose daughter is dying of cancer and the insurance will not pay for it. And he's been told about the money. So he and Dolph converge on the hospital to get the money, along with a gang of, it's not quite clear what they are. They're some sort of militia neo, like at least part of them are like neo-Nazi white supremacist militia folks. Really what they are is just a bunch of jobbers for, you know, Scott to kick in the face.
Fodder.
Yep. The other thing to be aware of with this one, and this is where I do grade this movie a little bit on a curve. It was filmed during the height, not that we're out of the pandemic by any means, but it was filmed during the height of COVID, pre-vaccines. You know, so that's one reason that I think its scope is maybe perhaps a bit smaller than what people might be expecting. I knew because I was recording with Scott while he was filming this, and I knew we were talking about all the protocols they had to go through and all the things that they had to do and stuff. And it was a very safe set. It was a very secure set, but it also limited how much they were able to do. Very similar to, you know, some of the other movies we've seen where it's predominantly one location. And the reason for that is because then you can control the set and the set safety. So I do think they were fighting a little bit of an uphill battle on this one before it even got started. But yeah, as far as my thoughts go, I'm pretty much just going to echo everything you said. I think it's pretty good. I think when the action does kick in, which does take a while, it's pretty well done. I thought Scott was really light on his feet in this one. I enjoyed his performance in it. Dolph is always enjoyable, and they have a really nice rapport in their handful of scenes that they have together. They play off each other. You can tell they've worked together many a time before because it just feels easy. But it still feels, I think I told my wife, I said, it kind of feels like a 2015 or 2016 Scott Adkins movie, not a 2021 movie. And I think the biggest problem that it has is, and this is no fault of the movies, but a month ago we got One Shot. And we got what I think is an elite level Scott Adkins movie and possibly an elite level just action movie in general. And so it's hard to watch this and not, even though it was filmed before One Shot, it's hard not to watch this and kind of feel like maybe it's a little bit of a step back. But sometimes, I mean, this is, like I said, first movie they made coming out of COVID. Obviously things are building back up again. You know, we know Scott's doing Day Job and John Wick and Accident Man 2. So obviously things are building up. There is part of this that to me sort of feels like everybody's shaking off the cobwebs of trying to figure out how to get back on a movie set in this new reality that we're dealing with.
Yeah, it definitely feels, and it feels sparse because of that, because the pandemic really hit right as they just started filming and they had to shut down for a long time. You didn't bring it up, but that's really why Scott had the time to start the Art of Action and had time to show up on this very podcast, was because he was basically stranded for a while because he had planned out to film the film and then it just got shut down so early. And like I said, they started filming basically when they didn't know what was going on or how really to make a film work in this situation. So they did the best they could, but it leaves the film feeling, again, sparse and slight in places through no fault of their own. Like there's a lot of effort on screen. There's a lot of craft on the screen, but they're not working with a whole lot.
Yeah. Even the cast, right? If you look, you know, this is a demolition crew, but we really only see, I don't know, a handful of guys. The gang consists of about five people. And that's one of the things that I think does kind of hamper the not the quality of it, but the quantity of action. One thing I do want people to be aware of when they go into this movie is it does not have the quantity of action that I think you would expect it to going into a movie like this. There are only about four major like hand-to-hand scenes. They're brilliantly choreographed by Tim Mann, but they are fairly brief for the most part. And they don't come until the third act of the movie. The first two acts are pretty pretty character drama heavy, which is fine. I don't care about that, especially when I like the actors and what they're doing, but it is something that I think people should be aware of. If mm-hmm. they're expecting, you know, something on the level of, say, Accident Man or something like that, where it's kind of just nonstop wall to wall action. This is not that movie.
No, not at all, really. I mean, like, so for the first 45 minutes or so, it's basically a character drama or like a thriller. There's one brief fight scene at the beginning that's really quite wonderful, but that's really just an introduction to Scott's character. And then it becomes like this kind of character drama thriller thing for about 40 minutes of the film before we get into like the back half and the chase and the action and the spin kicks and all that stuff that we come to these movies for.
Yeah. And again, like I said, the character work, I think, is pretty solid, but it is what it is. It is character work. And there's I almost thought there might be a little, for as sparse and stripped down as the movie is, I also thought there might be a few too many moving parts. You know, we have Dolph and his daughter. We have all the things. There's a whole subplot going on in the prison that Dolph works in. That's how all the money issue comes about anyway. And then we have Scott and him making friends with another guy on the demolition crew, plus Scott kind of dealing with his demons. And then there's some weird infighting internal dynamics amongst the bad guys that mm-hmm. they spend time on. There's a lot of moving parts in a movie that is so stripped down and clocks in at, you know, 89 minutes with credits. I think I wonder if that's a function of, again, maybe because of COVID, they couldn't do everything they wanted, so they had to fill that runtime in with more character stuff. I don't know. And just for folks listening, I don't have any, other than the filming of the movie, I have no insight. I have no insight on this movie from Scott. He's busy right now, so he's not recording or joining me for this one. I have no insight. This is just me speculating, but there's some interesting, and I don't necessarily mean good, interesting amount of stuff going on in a movie that still is so sparse and stripped down.
Yeah. It feels like you said, it's kind of a throwback to the way DTV movies were. Like I said, you know, five, six years ago, or even before that, where it's almost like they had to make up for lack of action or lack of budget with dialogue and like plot twists and things like that. And it's not that any of this stuff is really, really overly badly written. It's not badly written. It's not really badly performed. It's just so a lot of this stuff in the beginning is kind of unnecessary. And you know, it's like you said, for a movie that's so stripped down, it definitely is convoluted in places where it doesn't need to be. And like I said, that definitely hurts it a little bit. I mean, it doesn't necessarily drag. There's just moments where you're going to be like, is this really necessary? Like, do we need the prison stuff? Do we need the warring like prison gang faction subplot and on all of that? It keeps us away from what we care about. It's like that old Simpsons thing about when will they get to the fireworks factory? You know, that's the whole thing. You're just waiting for like the fighting to happen, the shooting to happen. You know, you're waiting for what we were advertised.
Yeah, and so much of it feels like, trying to do this without spoilers, it feels so much like it's there because it's important that, you know, Dolph's character in particular is making some pretty horrifying choices in this movie. And I think a lot of that prison stuff is there to establish that, to help keep us on his side by looking and going, oh, well, the money he's taking, you know, that he's trying to take, it belongs to really, really bad people. Yes. And so it does help flesh out Dolph's character a little bit and keep us a bit more sympathetic to him when we might not necessarily be, because, you know, he essentially is acting like a corrupt prison guard here. He's mm-hmm. doing it for a noble, you know, a noble reason. But and so I think that is a lot of why it's there. But I'm with you. There was a sense of get me to the fireworks factory, which is not, you know, folks, we're not saying that we need all of our action movies to be wall-to-wall action. I mean, sometimes that can be just as boring. I've seen plenty of where I actually find myself saying I'm tired of all the action going on here. But it does need to hit, I think, a little better and be a little more cohesive than what it is in this one.
Yeah. And like we said, I don't think it was necessarily completely within their control just because of the situation. But I feel like we've danced around it quite a bit. Let's get into it, my friend.
Yeah. Let me just ask, before we jump into spoilers, one quick thing, and then we will jump into spoilers. This is, I think, his fourth directed movie. What do you think of Dolph's direction in this? Because we can talk about that spoiler free.
Sure. Yeah. Dolph's direction, I think, has got, I actually rewatched several of his movies in preparation for this because I like to be thorough. And his direction has gotten stronger. Like, I don't think this is a badly directed film. Like, I think visually it's one of his stronger efforts. Early in his career, he definitely did a lot of the typical DTV, like poor stylistic choices, like Missionary Man, which he made back in 2005, is a very ugly, like sepia tone film. Command Performance has what Outlaw Vern always called avid farts, where it's just like stylistic tics for no reason. And over the past few years, with Icarus, which is called The Killing Machine here in America, Dolph has really become a more competent action director. And I think from like just a meat and potatoes crap perspective, that the directing in this is pretty strong. Like, the action is all wonderfully captured. Like, he doesn't overly stylize anything. I think it holds together fairly well, considering.
Yeah, I do too. I'm also very happy that the fight scenes that we do get are relatively cleanly shot. He doesn't over edit. He doesn't get in too close. You know, he clearly wanted to make sure that we could still see that it was Scott Adkins and him. Certainly more Scott than Dolph. I mean, Dolph is almost 70, so it's fine that he's not throwing it around like he used to. Yeah, it doesn't have any particularly, it's not very visually impressive. You know, it's still a pretty grungy movie. But like you said, Matt, he's not using that DTV sepia tone where I talked about this when I talked about Assassination Games, about how, you know, that entire movie looks like it's shot through a jar of urine. They stuck Granny's peach tea in front of the camera. And, you know, and that's, that was just such a thing then. And this does not look like that. This looks like they're using a lot of natural lighting, which I think is kind of contributes to that sort of a bit of a grungy look, but it's not a bad look. You know, I think Dolph has improved greatly. And I'm excited to see where he goes after this.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's got the fundamentals down finally, I think. I don't mean that in a condescending way. I think he's become solid, and I think he can only improve and become more confident and be better in the future. Definitely.
All right. With that, we are going to get into spoilers. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see the movie and have not already seen it and you care about spoilers, now is the time to stop this. But don't forget to rejoin us after you see the movie so you can hear the rest of our conversation. I like really quick, though. Before I do that, Matt, sorry, a little all over the map this morning.
That's okay.
I always like to tell people before we go into spoilers, would you or would you not recommend people check out Castle Falls?
I would. I think it is solid. I mean, it's not spectacular, but not every movie has to be a home run. I mean, this is basically a solid double to continue the baseball metaphor. And it's enjoyable if you like Scott Adkins, if you like Dolph Lundgren, if you like DTV action, you're not going to be disappointed. Just know that it's not going to reach the highs of like their highest peaks. It's just a nice, you know, slightly above the DTV average action film.
Yeah. It's a recommend for me too, especially if you like some of the earlier stuff. You know, if you're a fan of things like The Shepherd or Assassination Games, or even more recently, you know, Seized, it feels kind of like, it's different, but you know, it feels kind of on par with those. It gets in and gets out. It doesn't waste any time. I think there's more than enough to enjoy about it. If it sounds like we're being a little critical, it's only because again, we've seen the best of what these guys can do, but this is a rock solid direct to video action flick. It's absolutely worth, you know, the $6 that it'll cost to rent it. You'll get your money's worth out of it, I think. So
definitely. Yeah.
All right. And with that, we will go to spoilers in 3, 2, 1. All right. So Matt, what do you want to get into here on this one? I'll let you take the reins on this.
Well, I hate to start off with kind of a negative or a snide comment, but it's such a bummer that the best fight in the entire movie is in the first 5 minutes. Scott's fight with Evan Dane Taylor, you know, the very, very skilled stuntman who has worked as a fight choreographer and done a lot of work with the Marvel Netflix shows. He plays an MMA fighter who's basically Scott spars with to try to prove his worth. Scott's an aging MMA fighter. He's trying to prove he's not washed up. And they have this really great little like MMA scrap right at the beginning. And no action sequence in the rest of the film is as good as that little like 3 or 4 minute, you know, sparring session.
Yeah, that sparring session is really good. And once again, it also does... one of the things that I like that, and we've talked about this before, we talked about this on Unleashed, about how an action scene, the best action scenes also are storytelling devices. They move the plot forward. They tell us things about the characters. They're not just, you know, they're not just choreographed routines. And this is one fight that really does, it really establishes Scott's character, because the whole reason he is not making it as an MMA fighter is because he backs away. He can't, and that's exactly what happens. I mean, he kicks this guy's ass, right? But then he can't put him down and he ends up getting, you know, submitted. And it really does sort of establish an arc that we're going to get for Mike here in this, where he's going to have to learn how to, you know, how to really follow through on this stuff, or he's not going to make it. So I agree with you. I think it's a really well done MMA style fight, which we don't see a ton of from Scott. You know, his MMA is not his area of expertise. And it also establishes some nice character stuff. That, yeah, certainly I'm with you, had me thinking that had my hopes maybe a little bit higher for the movie than they probably should have been.
Yeah. It's always a bit of a downer when an action film doesn't build to a crescendo. Like when you get the best action sequence early on or in the middle, and then everything else feels like a denouncement, that's never good. I'm sorry to say, but one thing I do love that you brought up was it does give Scott an arc. It does about his character, and there's payoffs later in the film. And one thing I really admired about the script for this, as messy as the script is, everything has a payoff in some way. Anything they establish early in the film has a point later in the movie. Now, is there too much stuff sometimes? Sure. But like they establish that Scott's got a bum shoulder. Well, at the end, the bad guy wails on his shoulder. That they bring up that, you know, Scott got choked out, you know, he has trouble getting submitted. He basically gets submitted. That's how he loses his fights. The bad guy nearly chokes him out. So he overcomes that. Little things like that are sprinkled throughout the movie.
Yeah, actually in almost everything, you know, even the stuff in the prison that we're still not sure is that essential. All of that also all has payoffs, like everything. It is a very from a script standpoint, I think it's a very satisfying movie. You do feel, for the most part, very satisfied. You know, like I called it as soon as George gets killed. I'm like, well, Scott's going to have a change of heart and he's going to give one of the bags of money to George's family, you know?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like there's a good amount of, for lack of a better term, sort of feel good in this movie at the end, which I appreciated, because there is such a tendency in DTV movies to get too clever by half and want to say something profound when you don't maybe necessarily have the talent or budget to pull off something profound. You know, you make a super bleak ending out of a movie. It's one of the things I've said, even though I love the movie, for me, I'm so glad they came back with Debt Collectors 2, because I really thought that the end of the first Debt Collector, which I guess spoiler for Debt Collector, you know, was Jesse trying to be Jesse in a movie that doesn't really fit. Right.
It's so funny you bring that up, because as you were talking about the tendency, I immediately thought about the first Debt Collectors movie. That's why I laughed, because that's immediately where my mind flashed. Because you're right, that is such a thing in DTV action, is wanting to be, like I said, too clever for your means. And this film, to its credit, doesn't do that.
It has modest goals, modest aspirations, and I think it achieves those modest goals and modest aspirations. And you know, you mentioned this when we were talking. We've talked quite a bit about Scott. I think he's great. We've talked quite a bit, you know, about Dolph, but we haven't really given any love to any of the rest of the cast, which I do think, for a bunch of fairly, you know, relatively unknown but working direct-to-video actors, by and large, if there's problems I have with this movie, it ain't in the acting.
Not at all.
And I really thought that, I think it's, is it, I can't remember, is it, yeah, Scott Hunter that plays the villain. I thought he cut a pretty imposing, you know, cuts a pretty imposing villain, especially for somebody that we're expecting to stand toe to toe with Scott Adkins.
It's also considering he's not really an actor by trade. I mean, he acts a little bit, but he's mostly a stuntman. And he handles the drama parts well enough. I mean, like I say, he definitely looks imposing, and he certainly has got the physicality part down. I think the main problem with his part was, again, more of the logistics of near the end of the film, was his fight with Scott feels a little hampered by the plot, because there's a bit of a ticking clock at the end, and so you don't necessarily get to see everything that he can do as an on-screen fighter against Scott. But what's there in their fight is good, and like I said, he definitely brings a nice sense of menace to it, and the idea that he's just this mercenary who just wants money, like he has no ideology. He's basically fleeced these you know, white supremacist militia guys into basically helping him, but when all he really wants is to get money and run off with his stripper girlfriend.
Yeah,
it's a nice sleazy character. It's the kind of character you want to see Scott, you know, spin kick.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing I did appreciate in terms of how the villains interact, you know, it's built into the movie, but I appreciate this kind of direct to video ingenuity. All the bad guys have guns, but the hospital is wired with dynamite. And so they don't really get to use the guns, because they don't want, you know, a stray bullet bringing the whole building down on top of them, which is a very clever way of dealing with those real world limitations on direct to video action. You know, why don't these guys just come in with guns blazing and shoot the hell out of Scott and Dolph? Well, because they can't. And so now we have a justification for why everybody can, you know, is doing martial arts and hand to hand close quarter stuff rather than shooting at everybody, which I appreciate that kind of thoughtfulness in at the script stage and sort of at the filmmaking stage to explain why we're watching the type of movie that we're watching.
Yeah, it's true. But by having the demolition aspect and the explosives, it also means that the majority of the movie takes place in a run down, dilapidated building. And it's not very visually interesting to look at. It's kind of like, it reminds me of how, you know, of how Albert Pune would take, you know, whatever locations he could find and then just stage a movie there. It reminded me a little bit of like Mean Guns or something like that, where it's just all about, you know, these characters in like this kind of like dull space. And you're trying to basically make the film interesting by their actions, not necessarily by what they're in, like where they're physically at. So really the setting is not super visually interesting. It's just basically a bunch of dilapidated hallways and busted up rooms.
Yeah, it definitely is that, you know, and again, that was by design. I mean, they got access to this building that, and for those folks who are wondering, yes, the building does actually get demolished. It was a proper demolition. So no CGI building falling down, like they actually blow up the building. But yeah, it's a demolished building. I mean, there's it's gray hallways and white drywall and, you know, and that's about it. It's not, and I like that you brought up Albert Pune, and I like in particular that you brought up Mean Guns, because I actually just saw that for the first time last year. I was on Schlock and Awe with our friend Lindsay Wilkins, and we did Mean Guns as one of the movies, and as big of a Pune fan as I am, I had missed that one, and I friggin' loved it. But the one thing I will say that something like Mean Guns has going for it that this one doesn't is, in spite of it being a flat, dull, bland location, Mean Guns has certified unhinged genius Albert Pune letting guys like Tom Matthews and Christopher Lambert and Yuji Okamoto and all these people just go off and just do, you know, just the craziest, weirdest things. Whereas here, everybody plays it straight in this, which is, to its credit, that's good. It's a serious action movie, but it certainly doesn't help offset the blandness of that location the way, you know, whatever Lambert is doing in Mean Guns does.
It's true. Yeah. Because everyone's playing it straight and they should, because that's what the script calls for. It makes you more aware of how sparse it is, because they're not filling the space with bombast, you know? So it becomes more of a cat and mouse movie when you really want it to be more of a like throw down dirty, like punching, kicking, you know, shooting kind of movie. And really it's more about Dolph and Scott kind of avoiding the bad guys than it is about, you know, this you know, free for all.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some pretty clever scenes of that where they're like ducking around corners and stuff like that. You know, again, the staging in this, I think, is pretty good despite the sort of blandness of the location. And I never want to judge a movie and say, well, they should have done this, that, or the other, right? You get the movie that you get. But I also couldn't help thinking as I was watching this, and it has been years since I've seen it, so maybe I'm way off base, but I also couldn't help thinking of the great Walter Hill's Trespass.
That's immediately what I thought of too, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Which is a very similar plot, but done with so much panache and verve and, you know, and Walter Hill being Walter Hill. And again, similar thing, letting Ice-T and Ice Cube and Bill Paxton and Bill Sadler really go big, go for it, you know, because that was the movie that's what that movie required, was them doing some pretty big stuff, especially Ice-T and Ice Cube. Yeah, again, this one feels, and again, a lot of that is a function of budget and time and stuff, but this just feels so much more constrained than I think anybody watching it wants it to be, because you are right. Even when it goes off, it doesn't ever really quite go off the way you want it to. I love Tim's choreography in it. I think the choreography is absolutely brilliant, but I wish there had just been more of it.
Yeah, it never quite kicks into third gear. You know, I mean, it'll be exciting, it'll be thrilling, but there's always a moment in a good martial arts fight where it goes into overdrive, like where things really get serious and really get hectic and fast and urgent. And sadly, nothing in this gets to that point. Like it all just gets to like a level of good, and never pushes to excellent. And, you know, and that sounds really critical, but again, I want to make it very clear that everything in this, everything with the action, the way it's filmed, the way it's choreographed, the way it's performed is top notch. It just feels restrained.
Yeah. Which again is tough. I know the movie was 10 years ago, but it is a bit tough. Like, you know, not surprisingly, even though they team up, Scott and Dolph have a fight and it's pretty good, but I've seen Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen what they can do when they are actually given the room to go for it. And I'm sure Dolph now being, especially Dolph being 10 years older, you know, probably doesn't have that in him to do that anymore. And I get that, but it does make it hard when you're kind of watching these guys going, I know what more this could be.
Yeah. Well, and I think to Scott and Dolph's credit, they really try to make up for that with good dramatic work. Like you talk about how Dolph is kind of hard to root for in some of the later moments. I think they do a really great job of establishing him as sympathetic when they bring up the fact that his daughter's sick and you see him on the phone with the insurance company. He has this wonderful little bit of acting where he finds out he can't pay for his daughter's cancer treatment and he breaks down in his car. And to me, it's amazing to think that the guy who was in Red Scorpion would have that kind of moment of pathos and sadness in him, you know, eventually. Because people always think that Dolph always has a stigma of not being a decent actor. But I think moments like his little like breakdown scene over the insurance shows that he really can go there when needed.
Yeah, the thing with Dolph that is crazy to me. is how empathetic and kind he can portray himself to be. You know, I mean, like you said, he's Red Scorpion, he's Ivan Drago, but when he like softens his face up, which, you know, is if you've seen interviews with him, I mean, Dolph just comes across as like the nicest guy on the face of the earth, right? And so it is pretty great when he gets to tap into that, because he does have an inherent kindness and empathy, I think, that he doesn't get to use very much. That was one of the things I liked about For All Its Avid Farts. I thought he did that really well in Command Performance.
Yes,
the character in that was very good and very likable. There's just something about Dolph where you want to root for him, even when he's being a monster, even when he's being Andrew Scott. You can't help when he goes, "That's the spirit, soldier." You can't help but be like, "Fuck yeah, Dolph, you rule." And so in this, yeah, he's got some good scenes with his daughter. He gets some good pathos, some good emotion. You're never really feeling at any point that he's ever going to do, you know, a movie that again tries to be too clever is maybe going to have him do a heel turn in the third act. And you never really get the sense that he's ever going to do a heel turn. Like he wants the money, but he also isn't desperate enough that he's going to let these people just kill Scott Adkins, you know, and so that he can take the money. And I appreciated that. I thought that was a nice thing about this movie. It's not ever very stressful, and I don't mean that as a criticism.
No, not at all. And I feel we should mention that his daughter in the film, Emily, is played by his real life daughter, Ida, which I think plays into why those scenes are sweet and why they really come across well. Because you're right, he does have a real like softness to him here that's enjoyable, and it's so much fun to hear him talk about. And this is a spoiler part of it, but it's a minor thing, but it made me laugh when I watched it. But he mentions how much he liked old school rap. Like his daughter's trying to get him to like listen to music, and he's like, "I don't really like this new stuff. I don't get what they're saying." But Tupac, Biggie, those guys were poets. And for me, it almost justifies the entire film just to have that little soundbite of Dolph Lundgren saying that he digs Tupac and Biggie. That's such a weird like digression that it charmed me.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's some really nice little stuff in there like that. You know, I like to the you know, kind of switching to Scott a little bit. I like his relationship with George, who's yeah. You know, obviously set up to basically get fridged, but nonetheless, they do establish that relationship and the idea that he has seen Scott fight. And so when he gets killed, you know, Scott even has a line about there's, you know, one guy in the world besides me who's seen my fights before, you know.
Yeah.
And it really does help give that motivation again for Scott to have to develop that killer instinct that he doesn't have. That's the other thing I noticed this time is, so especially for me, Scott's performance in this, because he's just using his regular normal Birmingham accent, this feels like a role that is one of the most that's like him in mm-hmm. real life. Like the whole time I was watching this, I'm like, no, I've talked to this guy for, you know, dozens of hours on the phone, you know, and I really enjoyed that because I just find him and Dolph in particular in this movie to be so goddamn likable, just so likable that I enjoyed the movie for all my flaws because I just liked seeing them on screen in this.
Yeah. And when they do get to play kind of like the buddy banter in the later half of the film, you're right. It's super enjoyable. It makes you smile. And I wish the movie had more of that. And we got to that quicker. Because like a buddy action, a true buddy action film between those two, I think would be a goddamn delight, you know, but there's just not enough of that here. They sprinkle it in and I really wanted more.
Well, and that really kind of sums up the movie, right? We enjoyed it, but we wanted more. I mean, I think there's my tagline, Shout Factory, when you put out the Blu-ray that on the cover, enjoyed it, but wanted more. Because that is really almost every problem with this movie just stems from, again, whether it's a factor of time, budget, the circumstances they were working in, or they weren't even aiming higher. I don't know, but the bones, the structure, the foundation for an elite action movie is here, but they just couldn't or wouldn't go far enough for us to get it.
Yeah, and like I said, I think because of the circumstances, we can't blame anyone in particular. It was just an issue from where they did the best they could. But you're right, because as guys who love this stuff, I mean, and just love it in the very fiber of our being, it's hard not to be a little bit frustrated with this one. But as like I said, I do think it's good. I mean, if anyone who's a Scott Atkins fan, I'll say that I think it's better than Seized to give you like a level of comparison. I think it's a more complete film than that one. It doesn't have the great action of it, but it's a more complete film. And that's how you kind of have to look at a lot of these direct to video films. You have to think about them in relation to what they are compared to other ones of their ilk. And like I said, to me, this one is just such a mid-range, middle of the road kind of example. It's not bad, but it's not great either. And that feels like such a wishy-washy way of saying it, but really that's the best way to encapsulate it is that's what it is. It's okay. Epitome of okay.
It really settles in right around the Assassination Games range for me. That's sort of where I'm with you. I think it's better than Seized. But it doesn't have Mario Van Peebles doing his thing.
That's true.
And it also doesn't have, you know, the fight that Scott has in Seized where his hands are tied behind his back is better than any single fight that's in this. But I do think overall, this is a better, more cohesive movie. I agree with what you said, that it's a more complete movie. The characters, it has a beginning, middle, and end. Our characters have arcs. They go on a journey. So in that regard, I do think it's better. I think it's also probably arguably better. I mean, I guess we don't need to rank it against every Scott Adkins. I'm trying to give people an idea of sort of where I would place it so that they know what to expect. Managing expectations, you know.
Of course, it's probably
better than Close Range as a whole. Although, again, I think the thing that Isaac can always do is in almost any Isaac movie, you're guaranteed at least one or two action scenes that are just going to be stone cold bangers. And other than that opening MMA fight in this one, there just isn't an action scene that's really going to be that memorable. But I still think the character work in this is probably better than in those two movies.
Yeah. I don't think that there's any argument there. It's just so much of Castle Falls is muted. Like you shouted out Mario Van Peebles in Seized, and that movie needed or Castle Falls needed some of that Mario Van Peebles like energy. Like it needed some of the, again, I'm going to use that word, bombast that he brought to that role. Like this movie really needed a Mario Van Peebles in like the villain role, or like a featured henchman role. Someone who could get in there and not necessarily tip it towards parody and absurdity, but somebody could just bring a little bit of loudness to it.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I was really kind of surprised that it didn't go that way when I saw Kevin Wayne show up, because he can, I have seen him in stuff where he can go, you know, bigger like that. But yeah, I think bombast is the right word. You know, sometimes movies can be too bombastic, but sometimes they need a little bit of bombast. And this is one that needs a little bit of bombast, a little bit of oomph. Especially when you're going to have Scott and Dolph play, you know, upstanding nice guys, then you need somebody to kind of balance that out. So,
yeah. And as good as Scott Hunter is in this, and I do think he's good. He gets really blown off the screen from a screen presence perspective by both Dolph and Scott. He is nowhere near the movie star, and Scott and Dolph are true blue, purebred movie stars. And Scott Hunter just can't keep up with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, in fact, I mean, Scott Hunter even gets blown, you know, kind of left in the dust by some of his own like colleagues, like Kim DeLonghi, is who we have not mentioned, who is pretty great. And frankly, I think they kill her way too soon in the movie. I mean, I know it's still towards the end, but you know, cause she was the one character that I sort of felt was maybe kind of trying to go for that bomb a little bit, bring some of that energy to it. But then she gets killed, and that's just kind of that.
She does get some of the best lines. Like she says, you know, if you tell us where the money is, we might let you go. And she goes, spoiler alert, we're not going to, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She's, I mean, she's playing such a cliched character, you know, the vixenish bad guy's girlfriend, who's you know, kind of a psychopath, but she does it, she plays it well, and she does bring a little bit of energy to that role. So,
yeah. And she gets to have like a cool villain scar. I mean, like, but it felt like that. It felt like she was being reined in to me. Like, I felt like she, like, I think you're right. I think she was going for that. And I felt like she was being maybe held back, either if it was by the script, the situation, or by the direction. Like, it felt like she was like scratching at the door of something that the film needed, like a spark that the movie needed that just didn't quite ignite.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. All right. Well, Matthew, we're going on about an hour here. So we'll start winding down here. What else do you want to talk about with the movie?
Well, I think the music's surprisingly good. That doesn't get shouted out enough in these sort of talks, but you know, there's a lot of original music in this film, and it all works pretty well. It definitely carries some of the slower moments of the film. I mean, it's got a good score. There's some nice original compositions. I always love the fact that that kind of Dolph seems to care about those kinds of details. Like he's really trying to make well-rounded films, and I appreciate the effort. I just think he was a little bit off this time, but it's not from like a, I mean, it's not from like a wanting to make a good film, because you can definitely see that he definitely put care into it. Like so much of the movie is very well planned out. Like the sense of geography also in the movie is very good. Like you always kind of know where everyone is in this multi-floor building, and there's a lot of attention to detail that would have been brushed aside in lesser DTV movies. And as we talk about the negatives of this film, I want to make it very clear that this movie does a lot of things right, and there's things to appreciate and enjoy about it. And just because we're being nitpicky, that's kind of our job, is to be a little nitpicky, because we want to keep your expectations in check. We don't want you to have that, you know, initial disappointment based on expectation, because expectation is the death of enjoyment to me. So we want to keep those in check.
Yeah, absolutely. Expectation is the death of enjoyment. I agree. I ran into that, you know, with One Shot, because obviously my review and my opinion on that, and yours as well, was extremely glowing. But I had some people who watched it based on sort of our recommendations, who maybe we had kind of blown up their expectations a little too much. And you know, and so again, it is about tempering those expectations. I want people to know what movie they're getting into when they watch Castle Falls, because one of the tough parts with being a critic is you don't ever know. And so sometimes if you are expecting something different, you know, that can, it's always, sometimes I will try and always watch a movie, not always, some movies I can watch and go, well, that's just shite, I don't need to ever see that again. But, you know, movies like this one, where I'm a little bit on the fence about how I feel about it, I always like to try and watch it more than once. There's been, just sticking with Scott, there's been, you know, a dozen Scott Adkins movies that the first time I watched, I was kind of like, eh, that wasn't very good. And then go back and watch him again. Or like when I was rewatching him for the show, finding myself find more and more things to love about them, to where, you know, I end up doing kind of not complete 180s necessarily, but really turning around on them. You know, one of the big ones for me is I remember the first time I saw Scott Mann's The Tournament, I thought it was only okay at best. And now I friggin' love The Tournament, man. I love that movie. I will try and tell anybody and everybody to watch that one, but it took a couple times for me to get there. Yeah. Sometimes that just is what it is.
Yeah. And I'm very cognizant of that as a guy who really labels himself as a film critic. I actually did watch this one twice to make sure I wasn't just letting my disappointment with the initial viewing color my, or that my expectations not being met were coloring my critique of it. So I watched it again right before we were doing this, actually. And I want to say that our assessment of it has been more than fair. There is good stuff here, but there is bad stuff as well. The bad stuff is not through the fault of, like, again, bad filmmaking or a low budget. It's just sometimes things don't necessarily coalesce like you would expect. They don't come together like you would necessarily want. And I think that's just the case here. But there is still plenty of good stuff if you're willing to go in with an open mind and keep your expectations at a normal level.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Sometimes the whole ends up becoming less than the sum of its parts. And I think this might be one, but still, you know, it's, again, it's a recommendation for both of us. It's, you know, it's not like one shot where I gave it like the highest possible recommendation I can give, but that's also one shot. I mean, that's an all time.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's not one shot, but it's not Scott Cloud either, or it's not Max Cloud, excuse me, or it's not Legacy of Lies, or right, it's not Dead Reckoning, you know. So it's way better than all those, you know.
My go-to whipping boy in the Adkins oeuvre, Dead Reckoning. That's always that's always my, it ain't Dead Reckoning, guys. No, it's good. Anything else you want to add?
Well, just that, you know, I think that if you guys haven't seen The Killing Machine or Icarus with Dolph, or you haven't seen Command Performance, you guys should check those out. They're great. You and I have talked before about, you know, a good Dolph performance in The Package by Jesse V. Johnson. That's another Dolph film. If you guys haven't seen, you should totally check out. But I think Dolph is doing solid work that's often overlooked by people, even in people who are into what we're into, which is DTV action. So again, if you haven't seen Icarus or The Killing Machine as it's known here in America, check that one out. Check out Command Performance, and by all means, see The Package. That's one of Dolph's better DTV films, and it's got that Scott connection from being directed by Jesse V. Johnson.
Yeah, I'm also going to throw in one in The Chamber because there's
an excellent choice.
Whole bunch of connections there, because both The Package and one in The Chamber were written by Derek Kolstad, and they, who would go on to create the world of John Wick, and they very much feel like John Wick side stories, like they could take place in that same universe. One in The Chamber is directed by the great William Kaufman. Like you said, The Package is directed by Jesse D. Johnson. I think both of those are a lot of fun. One in The Chamber, Cuba Gooding Jr. is not great, but Dolph is terrific in it. And he's bringing that bombast to it. He's got this unique character with just an absolutely atrocious fashion sense that it's great. It's a great performance. So hopefully if nothing else, Castle Falls gets people to check out more Dolph Lundgren, especially outside of the Rockies and the Punishers and the Red Scorpions and stuff like that. Yeah. Anything else, Matt?
No, I mean, just that, I do have one thing to say. You know, if Scott only made movies of this quality, I would still be only made movies of the quality of Castle Falls, I would still be satisfied with them, because again, it's not bad. I want to be that. I feel like I'm having to defend my own opinion now, but we've been so negative. I want to make people very clear that it's such a solid film, and some DTV actors would kill to have a film that was this solid and this complete in their filmography.
Yeah, and it's also missing a sleepy Bruce Willis, which automatically makes it better than most DTV action stuff out there.
That's very, very true.
Cheap shot on Willis, but he's earned it. He's done the work to earn that cheap shot. Yeah, no, I agree. This is a solid movie. I think that's part of the reason we're kind of being a little more negative about it, is when you have a movie that is this just solid batting practice, fastball down the middle, doesn't do anything great, doesn't do anything bad. It gets kind of hard sometimes to talk about it. Like right before we started recording, I was kind of like, I really don't know if we're going to go more than about 10 or 15 minutes on this. There just isn't that much to pull apart. It is what it is. It does what it does well. Everybody should check it out. I mean, that's the short review.
Well, yeah, and you did mention your pull cover quote. If Shout Factory was going to do a pull cover quote for yourself, here's mine. Competent.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And hey, in the DTV arena, competency is not guaranteed at all at any point.
So true.
We've all seen plenty of DTV action movies where competency is not a given. So the fact that it is competent is a good thing. So, all right. Well, with that, Matt, I'm gonna wrap us up here. Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Wheels Critic. That's wheels like wheels on a car, and critic like you're going to critique those wheels on a car. I'm a freelance writer. I'm a freelance critic. If you guys are looking for someone to review your movies to be on your podcast, hit me up. I am a samurai. I'm a Ronin. And my sword is my shitty movie opinions. I'm also featured regularly at filmcombatsyndicate.com. I have my own podcast, Video Culture. That website is video-culture.com. Where there's lots of essays about films and over 70 episodes of me and my friend Ryan talking about movies like you and I are doing just now.
Yep. And I can't recommend Video Culture enough.
Thank you.
I enjoy that podcast. I don't get to listen to it as much as I should because all my damn friends have podcasts and you all are very good at them. And there just aren't enough hours in the day for me to listen to them all. But every time I do get to drop in and listen, it's just a delightful time and I love it. So I really do recommend that to people. I can't imagine you listen to this show and don't already follow Matt, but if you don't, the guy is just doing great stuff. Your interview from a few weeks ago with Jesse was just wonderful. Just one of the best things I've read this year.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, if you guys get a chance to check that out, I'm very proud of that. I got to speak with Jesse B. Johnson about Hell Hath No Fury, and I was amazed by his candor and his openness. It ended up being, you know, several pages of just, you know, him talking about film theory and his love of film and his heroes and the nuts and bolts reality of making a film. And I'm intensely proud of how that came out. So thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, you bet, man. You bet. So make sure to follow Matt, make sure to read his words. He writes good words. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at Hibachi Justice. You can find the show on Twitter at Adkins Podcast. The main show is still on hiatus while I'm sorting some stuff out in my personal life. However, if you have not yet noticed, there is another little thing going on the Adkins channel, which is Skylines director Liam O'Donnell and great friend of the show and great Twitter friend Vice Victus and I are doing a weekly show called Action for Everyone, where we are just breaking down the week in action. It's a loosey-goosey chat. It's not nearly, I don't put nearly the level of work into it that I do this one, because that's not the point. The point is just supposed to be a bunch of us action Twitter folk hanging out and chatting about movies. So please do also check that one out.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm not just blowing smoke, but it's my turn to compliment you. I love what you guys are doing. I hope to one day sneak in there and get in there to chop it up with you guys. But it's such a fun, like, coffee talk for action nerds. It is so much fun to listen to. It's like sitting down with your buddies and just having a nice conversation about all these silly movies that we love so much. And you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That's all really Liam pulling this together, and then Vice just being, you know, Vice and just being able, you know, the nice thing for me on this one is, and I'm not minimizing myself or trying to be like falsely humble. I just show up and kind of go along for the ride for the most part, which is great because, you know, not everybody doesn't need to hear this, but whatever. I'm still recording. I put so much work into writing and researching and editing the regular Adkins episodes that it is nice to just be able to pull up my microphone, pull up Zoom, record. And when I have something to say, I have something to say. Otherwise, I just listen to those two boys just cut it up and say brilliant, insightful things. And it's a lot of fun. I'm really glad Liam came up with the idea. And I do have to give credit. This is Liam's baby. It was his idea.
Yeah, I mean, his inside baseball stuff is fascinating. His perspective on it is something that we so rarely get to hear. And Vice is one of the only true, completely unique personalities of film online criticism. Like he's not influenced by anyone else. He is just such his own person, motivated by his own experiences, and his voice is so unique and wonderful that I am in awe and jealous and just infatuated with his thought process all at once.
Yeah, that's a fair way to describe him. He's an amazing man. He really is. We need to all make sure that we tell him that as much and as often as we can, if for another reason than it embarrasses the hell out of him. And I'm
happy. Yeah. And that's always fun.
Matthew, buddy, this was so much fun. Let's do it again soon.
Let's not wait a year next time. Definitely not.
Let's do it.
Mike, thank you for having me on. I will be able to talk about anything you want me to talk about. It's always a pleasure. You are a gentleman and a scholar, and I love you to death, brother.
Likewise, brother. Love you too.
Thank you, man. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.